everyone. Welcome to Stutter Talk. You're here with the B team. I'm Roisin, and I'm here with Karen Herring.
Hey.
And Joel Cordy.
Hey, guys.
And this week, we'll be touching on the same topic that Peter and Joel Klein so comprehensively covered in their latest show, which is fluency shaping. We're not planning on defining it, and if you are looking for a much more comprehensive description of exactly what fluency shaping is, you should definitely listen to the Peter and Joe Klein show. And I think what we're kind of going to do is just go around and all tell our personal experiences working on or using fluency shaping and just let it go from there. So who wants to start?
Karen, you start. I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Didn't think you were going to volunteer me. Well, I guess we should probably say that although we're each giving sort of our own take on this, we all went to speech therapy at the same place.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's the point.
Our stories might be a little bit more related than three random people who stutter. I guess my experience with fluency shaping really started at the program that we all did at the American Institute for Stuttering. And I guess we had at AIS, we had learned sort of a bunch of different types of fluency shaping strategies, but the one that I really took a chunk of time to really work on was what AIS called vocal fold management. And Joe and Peter talked a little bit about it, how like you really break down your speech into like the most basic form and then you build it back up. And it was something for me that it did seem to help, but I was spending so much time on it and worrying about it so much that it seemed like the cons were outweighing the pros. Like I was so concerned that I wasn't going to be fluent, and I was so worried that like I had to think about so many things about how I was breathing and how many syllables per breath I was trying to use. And when it didn't work or when I didn't do something right, there was a lot of sort of self-blame on myself that I was doing something wrong. And I think ultimately, I'm sort of going on and on here, I think ultimately, I think fluency shaping can be really helpful, but it wasn't right for me. I didn't really, I wasn't willing to spend the amount of time and effort necessary, and it wasn't a good fit for myself.
One quick follow-up question I have for you, Karen. I think towards the beginning, you said that at AIS, we learned a lot of different fluency shaping strategies.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly did you mean by that?
I guess it's like really depends who you're talking to what the word fluency shaping really means. I know Peter and Joe were saying that like some people also classify fluency shaping as using like a light contact where you're like just barely making your articulatory touch, or If you're using sort of like a prolonged speech, or if you're going to like stretch into a word, or like a bunch of other sort of things other than.
Okay, that like.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think you, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying that we learned other things that in this whole area of fluency shaping or prolonged speech that someone might categorize even some of the other stuff that we learned as fluency shaping.
Right.
Okay.
That was actually a big chunk of the questions that I had for you, Karen. I just wasn't aware that things like pausing and easy onsets and rate control were categorized as fluency shaping.
Yeah,
for some reason, I always thought they were stuttering modification.
The way I guess I sort of distinguish them for myself, like to make sense of them, is like one is working on changing the way you stutter, and one sort of working on changing the way you speak fluently.
Right.
Like stuttering modification, you're doing all things to sort of change the way you're stuttering either before, after, or during.
Yeah, just going off of that, though, referencing one of the things in Peter and Joe's episode on fluency shaping, I thought Peter did a really clever thing when he gave an example and he introduced himself and he did something like, "I'm Peter Reitzis," and he asked Joe, "What is it that I just did right there?" And
right.
They made the argument that someone could say that was fluency shaping, someone could say that was stuttering modification, someone could say right. That was voluntary stuttering, and it I just thought that was very clever because I think that gets forgotten a lot of the times that what's actually happening and what. Things actually sound like sometimes there's an incredible amount of overlap there.
Yeah. I think it's really important to like think about what the speaker's intent is. It's not all about what you hear and what it sounds like.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, I think.
Right.
We got off on a tangent and no one else said their existence.
All right. Should I go next or are you wanting to go next, Roisin?
You go ahead, Joel.
Okay. I think I had a relatively similar experience as Karen had. And again, just before I get started, there's probably some people that are listening to the episode that had quote unquote fluency shaping therapy at some other location. And I've gotten into discussions with people who went to, or actually not people, a person who went to fluency shaping, who got fluency shaping therapy at Hollins. And he said that the fluency shaping therapy that I learned, wasn't right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, apparently there's, I don't know. There's a,
well, that explains it.
Yeah. Some people who would say that there is a very significant the difference, with fluency shaping from one program to the other one. I would disagree with that. Cause I think it's essentially the same thing, but I know that the type of therapy at AIS that we got a few years ago, their flavor, or whatever you want to call it, of, mm-hmm. of fluency shaping, as Karen said, is called vocal fold management. And I believe that that type of therapy kind of originated with Hollins, but only the parts that they thought worked the best and they thought was the most appropriate was the ones that were firmly in their program. And I'm totally paraphrasing right now, so you know, don't quote me, even though I'm on a recorded podcast. but that was my interpretation of what was going on. But anyway, back to my experience. Okay, mm-hmm. so when I went to AIS, and the first part of it was not related to fluency shaping per se. It was lots of aspects of other types of therapy, like avoidance reduction and stuttering modification, and lots of stuff relating to desensitizing oneself to their stuttering, and all of that I found at the time, and still find it to be enormously therapeutic for me. The program focuses, or the program focused, I shouldn't say focuses, because it's been several years now. Time is kind of getting away from me as of late, but, then, when the program focused more on vocal fold management, I was really, really excited about it, because, at that time in my life, I was very desperate to not stutter. So the idea of having something I could actively do and practice to prevent myself from stuttering was very, very attractive to me, and I would almost even say seductive to me. And the problem I had, and as it turns out from talking to other people, the problem a lot of other people have is that when you're in an intensive setting and you're around the same people every day, and you're all working on this the different way of speaking, and there's a lot of good, positive vibes in the air, it becomes an extraordinarily comfortable environment to speak. And fluency shaping, especially in the earlier stages of it when you're learning it, at least in my opinion, sounds very weird. And that... the weirdness of the way it sounds is very dampened when everybody is talking like that, because it's just, you know, that's just how, that's what everybody's practicing. And then I found that the level of weirdness and naturalness in my speech was uncomfortably high when I was out in the real world. And if I did not speak in that unnatural, uncomfortable sounding way, I would experience stuttering as before. And so I think Peter mentioned this, and it's he linked to a Woody Starkweather article about how, for some people, the cure is worse than the disease. Because I always thought of it as why would I spend all this time and effort to sound very weird when I already sound weird because I stutter? It just didn't seem productive to me. So that's why it wasn't right for me. But part of the problem was I was very, very excited about it, so it was kind of almost devastating to me when I realized that it wasn't quite going to be the ticket for me.
Joel, when did you realize that what wasn't the ticket for you?
Well, of course, right after I got done with the program, I think this happens to a lot of people too. I was experiencing lots of spontaneous fluency, just from like being on a high from the whole experience. And then once I felt myself experiencing stuttering, more often again, the way that I felt that I needed to speak in order to greatly reduce the stuttering, which I'll give an example, sounded something like this. I had to sound like this in order to not stutter. That method of speaking was, I was finding it was more uncomfortable to talk like that than to stutter, because it like I said before, it's weird replaces the existing weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole idea is that if you keep practicing, that way of speaking is supposed to get more and more natural, and then you're supposed to be able to carry that over. But that never worked for me. It never happened for me like that.
It always seemed, I mean, I don't know if this is true for everyone, but for people that I know, it seemed like as the naturalness increased, so did this stuttering.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
It was a very fine line between how natural it could get before it was too much like your real speech, and then the stuttering was coming through again.
Yeah. It was almost like sometimes I wonder if you brought a group of people away for 2 or 3 weeks and you taught them how to speak in a different accent or something, like if you could get the same therapeutic results as far as like percent stuttered syllables or whatever inside the clinic. So, you know, if you like taught everybody to speak in a British accent or try to teach them to speak in a voice that's not their voice, if you would get similar therapeutic results.
I would almost think you might, but I would hope that all of the discussion about like how we produce speech and sort of being more aware of our vocal folds and our articulators helps us in the long run to sort of reduce and change the tension that's there.
Yeah, that's.
But that might not be true. I just hope that it is.
You know, I think you're onto something there too. And the last two things you said are like totally. I'm really glad you said them, because if I would have listened to this episode after, and I would have thought that's a point that should be made, and you just made them. But
that's a point that should be made.
Yeah. So that's I think that's an excellent point. Okay, Roisin.
I kind of just wanted to touch on what Karen just said about like becoming more familiar with how to kind of manipulate your I don't know the technical term at all, but like the part of the body that you speak with. Because I remember at the place where we all had the therapy, the clinician who was running all of it, she would kind of make the point over and over again that even if you weren't going to his wasn't working for you, that like you had to become familiar with how to really know what well and manipulate your own body.
Yeah.
And I do feel like working on vocal flow management, even though it wasn't something that I could like carry out in my real life, it did kind of put me more in touch with certain parts of my body and my speaking that I had just been kind of like rushing through. So that's kind of interesting. But
yeah,
I think that's a really good point too.
I sort of agree with everything that you guys have said about your experiences in terms of learning fluency shaping and trying to really make it work. The main feeling I remember during therapy and like shortly after was that the first half of the intensive program, when we were working on, you know, desensitization and being open about just stuttering and cleanly stuttering, I felt really empowered. And then once we sort of it was after the second weekend or on the second Wednesday or something, I remember we came in and it was like, today is the day when we're going to start fluency shaping. and it was like, we had sort of been like alluding to it. Like, well, eventually we'll be working on this and it'll be like, it will change everything. And I remember feeling in that last week when we were really, really like drilling vocal flow management and practicing at a really slow rate, like Joel demonstrated, that I started feeling really disempowered. And I started feeling really vulnerable again. And I started feeling really kind of like trapped. Like if I, and Joel also explained this, but like there's this thing where like either you use this and you talk really slow and you like insanely focus on using it. Because if you stop, then you're going to be stuttering like before, which like also felt really, really scary and painful. So it was like these two kind of scary options, and then it just felt really extreme and like kind of scary. And so like I sort of came out of the program and like had a lot of anxiety coming out of the program, feeling like, I'm not sure if I can make this happen. Like, I'm not sure if I can actually like speak in this way. And I never really could. And I had to sort of like just kind of completely drop it. Like drop vocal flow management, drop fluency shaping, drop the breathing stuff. Just in order to like have enough energy to like face my life stuttering. And that was, yeah.
Then at some point some would consider sort of what you've been working on now with the pausing, a fluency shaping strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why listening to Peter's show, I was like, oh my God, I've been doing fluency shaping. that's interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, that's nitpicky. I don't think too many people would just like right away associate pausing with fluency shaping, right?
Well, you're doing things to become more fluent.
Okay, right. So it's like that approach, that mindset.
Right.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
Yeah. But I do have to say that pausing helps me, and it doesn't feel like this program that I have to kind of like sign my life over to. But even though it helps me, I have also kind of come to a point even with pausing where I'm like, this trying to be fluent and working on ways in my speech to reduce stuttering, even if that there's something like pausing or rate control where it helps. I always kind of walk away from therapy or from using it, even if it works, kind of like half full, like kind of feeling like it's not getting at the actual problem for me.
Mm.
Just real quick, totally unrelated to anything, but for some reason when you're talking, Roisin, there's like a like kind of a slap sound every once in a while, so you're probably like rocking or something.
No, I have this hair clip and I'm
oh, okay.
I'm like so ridiculous in the show. I'm so sorry.
It's all right. It's all right.
It's absurd.
I just didn't want to interrupt you because you were on such a good roll and saying such good stuff.
Drop the hair clip, sorry.
Oh, anyway, okay, so you were talking about this idea where when you're employing some kind of strategy, almost that you feel a little bit less like yourself or just less accepting of yourself, perhaps.
It kind of feels like the when I was using vocal fold management, it just felt like I was like at war with my self, like over and over again. And with pausing, it doesn't feel like that at all. Or using any sort of like light contact or anything, it doesn't feel like I'm fighting my naturally speaking. But it kind of leaves me feeling like it's not like, even if it's helping, it's not, for some reason I feel dissatisfied as opposed to like when I'm using voluntary stuttering and like it's really helping me, I can feel completely satisfied.
Wait, you feel dissatisfied even with the pausing?
Yeah. It can help and like it feels good, but like once I get to a point where like it's helping, I'm like, okay, it's like helping me. There's still this feeling of that it's not addressing the actual problem.
Yeah.
Which I think the problem is just like feeling how helpless or like feeling trapped when I'm stuttering. And like, that's like kind of like what I fear the most about stuttering, and like the things to reduce my stuttering don't really address that.
That makes sense. Hmm.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, Roisin. I didn't know that you felt that way.
I think sometimes I get confused as to what my what my goal is in a situation or what my metric for success is, because there's always this little voice in my head I feel like that doesn't approve when there's a lot of stuttering. And it's hard for me to feel successful if I'm stuttering a lot, or I don't know if that's right. If I feel really out of control. And sometimes that's pretty correlated with stuttering, and sometimes it's not, but it seems like it's usually pretty correlated with hard, long stuttering. So whenever there's a lot of that, it's tough for me to feel successful.
Do you ever, like, in those times when you're feeling not successful or really, like, just frustrated, do you ever think about vocal fold management or, like, fluency shaping?
Well, you know, what worked for me for a time after that program is that I wanted to still tell people I was using vocal fold management or tell the clinicians that that's what was going on. So what I tried to do, and it turned out not to work so great because I don't think I was fully invested, but I would try to only use vocal fold management when I felt like I needed to use it. So I'd be using my spontaneous speech, and then when I felt like I was coming up on something I would stutter on, then I would go into this kind of a thing and then just fall out of it again. And then it was kind of working, like, or by working, I needed to find that. It was helping me to not experience like long struggled effortful blocks, but then I think as I fell out of practice with that style of talking with the fluency shaping stuff, because of course at the program, you know, you're working on it like 8 hours a day, and it just kind of got harder and harder to be able to do that, because I don't think I was putting in the time. But just one more point I wanted to make, and this is kind of an aside, and I brought this up on the show before, but I still at least the way that I used to fluency shape and the exaggerated form, I still think of that as like a flavor almost of voluntary stuttering in a way, because you're allowing yourself to talk a little different, to slow down, exaggerate, in an effort to make your speech a little easier. And you're not going to convince me that slower and unnatural way of speaking is fluency, because to me, fluency is spontaneous, natural fluency. And this way of talking, that's not fluency to me, but it's called fluency shaping. But to me, it sounds like just this exaggerated way of talking that can make stuttering a lot easier. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like, I'm all about experimenting and playing around with your speech so you can communicate easier or stutter easier, or stutter less, whatever you want to call it. But to me, it's still stuttering to me, you know. It's just I don't buy the quote unquote fluency aspect of it, because it doesn't sound like fluency to me.
That's so interesting, because it's like that just kind of like clarifies all of the battling over it, you know, like. Everyone's like, it's not, you know, it's not the way you talk. You're just, you're drilling something, and people who use it are like, but I'm speaking fluently and it feels great. And it's all just like different things for different people to help them feel comfortable.
Good. Yeah. Good about how they communicate. And I still think Peter gave that perfect example when he said, Peter writes this, you know, what was he using? Nobody knows except for Peter, because it sounds basically the same.
I think the thing that like gets me is that I think you're right. The point of all these things is for the person to communicate well and feel good about how they're communicating and whatnot. But I feel like I've known so many people that have spent so many hours practicing and practicing different fluency shaping things. And then for one reason or another, they go into a situation and they still stutter. And then they feel awful about themselves.
Yeah.
And like they did something wrong when in truth they just stutter. Hmm. And like it just like kills me. And I feel like for that reason alone, like I don't know if I can be completely on board with some fluency shaping things.
So, Karen, do you think that, I guess as a therapist, not necessarily as a person who's just stutters, do you think that you could responsibly use fluency shaping with a client?
I think I can use aspects of fluency shaping, and I think because I do stutter and I've sort of seen from my experience and from lots of friends and clients' experiences sort of how fluency shaping can help, but also how fluency shaping can be hurtful. I think that sort of helped me a lot in when I'm working with clients. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are definitely some parts of fluency shaping, depending on the person, that can be really, really great. But I don't think it's enough just to do the fluency shaping without addressing all of the other stuff and how the person feels and letting the person sort of understand and sort of get to that place where they see that if they're going into a situation and they're trying really hard to manage their speech, but they still stutter, it's not that they did anything wrong.
Right. We always heard, like, at our therapy, like, you can do all of it, you know? It's like you can desensitize, you can do voluntary stutter, you can do fluency shaping, and, like, make it all work by, like, taking things from different techniques and finding out what works for you. And I asked you that question, Karen, because, like, I'm not sure, like, if it's, like, I haven't really met a person before who actually like uses both stuttering modification and fluency shaping.
I think, I guess when I'm saying parts of fluency shaping, I don't mean like the really intense all the time vocal fold management type of fluency shaping.
Mm. Yeah, you're talking about like an easy onset, like on a vowel.
Right.
On a vowel.
Right.
And,
okay.
And sometimes
that makes sense.
I still think a little bit about, well, I have a tendency to block on vowels, and I still think that training, you know, with a, you know, like we sat there and we would do uh-huh. that for like hours. I think,
sounds ridiculous. No,
I think that that I the idea of okay, you know, I don't need to block hard on this vowel. And granted, you know, this sounds all nice and everything. It doesn't always work out so perfect, but that I can try to vibrate my vocal folds gently and get into it, and you know, try to do that quote unquote easy onset, and you know, something like the easy onset and a prolongation and stuttering modification. I mean, people are going to argue that they're not the same thing, and they probably aren't, but they're really close, I think.
But I do think you're right, Roisin. I don't know many people, if anyone, that does vocal that does fluency shaping in the sense that they're doing it not to stutter. Like they're going to change their speech so they're fluent and that they don't stutter, who also successfully incorporate something like voluntary stuttering. Like they just like don't seem to really go together in the same goals.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I don't know many people, if anyone, that really stick to something like a really strict form of fluency shaping, like the vocal fold management.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know anyone long-term that really has stuck to that and that it has been successful for them.
Yeah. But you know what's kind of funny that I just thought? And it's probably wrong because I guess Peter is someone who I know who, like, used one tool for, like, a long time. Like, he used voluntary stuttering for, like, years. But I don't really know people in general who use any speaking strategy, like, most of the time for a long time.
That's a good point.
Like people have ideas about them and like to use them and like need to use them at certain points in their life. But I don't really know anybody that like says this is for me and then it works a lot and I use it a lot.
I know a few people like that, but it's impossible to know if that's how they're always going to be because they're relatively young.
Right.
It's so interesting.
Yeah. That'd probably be a really good topic for another show too. Like, this whole idea about, if people, you know, actually use strategies all the time, if that's a realistic expectation.
Yeah.
Or like if people like actually change, like same question, but like actually change their speaking patterns.
And yeah. I think for fluency shaping, that sort of is the expectation.
Yeah. Because in order for it to work and like for it to become normal, in theory, you have to use it all the time.
Right.
Yeah. That seems wildly unrealistic to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like a perfect phrase, Joel. Wildly unrealistic.
But you know what? We're probably just lazy.
Yeah, we're just lazy. We don't want to put in, yeah, true.
Which, I mean, I can't even deny. I'm not,
yeah, that's true. Not
willing to put in the work in the hopes that I might become full fluent.
And that's because pretty cool.
A chance that I won't become fluent and then it'd just be a waste.
Yeah. Okay. Guys, it's been awesome. But I actually have to duck out.
Good episode, team.
So that's our take on fluency shaping very briefly. I'm sure that all three of us could talk for hours on it. But I hope that everyone has a happy new year. And thanks for listening to the B team. And again, if you have any, I don't think I gave the phone number at the beginning of the show, actually, after Karen deliberately gave me the phone number. So if you would like to call Stutter Talk and leave a voicemail with any comments or questions, please feel free. You can call us at 206-666-5340. And you can email the B team directly at bteam@stuttertalk.com. And we hope to hear from everyone soon. Okay. Bye, guys.
All right.
Bye, Roisin. Bye, Joel.
Is this a real hang up? It is, isn't it?
I mean, Roisin, like, really has to go.
All right.
Yeah, I do have to go, but
all right.
You guys can stay in the line.
All right. I'll see you. I got to go back to work, too. So.
Okay.
All right.
All right. See you, dudes.
Bye, guys.